Hello and welcome into the 48 Minutes Podcast by Believe. I'm Ross Geiger. This is episode number 10 for the show, and I'm happy to be joined alongside my co-host Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media and World B, Michael Freer. Gentlemen, how are we doing tonight?
Great day of basketball, lots of afternoon games helping us celebrate the Dr. Martin Luther King holiday, always a big NBA day, maybe only second to Christmas.
Yeah, World B?
Today was a great day for watching hoops, except if you're a fan of the Hornets or the Knicks, which, as luck would have it, I happen to be fans of both. So, and after what happened with the Magic on Sunday, this has been a real great 24 hours of hoops for this fan.
Well, you know what, World B? Watch the Houston Rockets tonight play the Lakers, and maybe they'll make you feel a little bit better not being a Rockets fan, because that has been quite ugly as of late. But let's go ahead and get into our opening tips. Bruce, we'll let you tip things off for us here tonight.
Well, one team that didn't play on Martin Luther King Day is the Brooklyn Nets, who are struggling since they lost Kevin Garnett, kind of as expected.
Kevin Durant,
thank you. What did I say, Kevin Garnett?
Yeah.
They could use him,
lost him too.
Yeah, they did lose him too. Thanks to Kevin Garnett going to the Nets, we have Jason Tatum now. So anyway, I digress. Since KD went down, Nets are 0-2. They were averaging 114.5 points prior to his injury. They're now averaging 100. Kyrie Irving has shot 36.3% from the field in the two games since he's gone down, averages only 19.5 points. So I would say that if early indications mean anything, Brooklyn is in for a long 3 to 4 weeks without KD.
Yeah, I was actually looking at some of the post-game chatter from the Nets team in the most recent loss. And Joe Harris, I think, said it best. Right now, this team is really focusing on shooting from the mid-range, and that team is not good from the mid-range. They really don't even have the personnel from that. So, you know, Joe said after the game that he had talked with some of his teammates and made it known to the media that, you know, we got to start shooting more threes or either get into the basket. And quite ironically, after our good friend Jared Greenberg joined the show and had mentioned just how little Ben Simmons is shooting the basketball, not sure if you guys noticed, but in their next game that night, Ben Simmons went 0-for-1 from the field, but still ended with a double-double. But as you said, Bruce, in episode 9, he's got to do something offensively, and he still hasn't. And much like you, I'm quite concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. World B, what are your concerns tonight, if any?
No concern off the top. My opening thought is how I think Anthony Edwards hopefully will get some serious consideration or at least make the All-Star team this year. He doesn't get mentioned when you look at breakdown. It's probably a numbers thing why he may not be selected. But if you look at his numbers, they've been really impressive this year on a team that's really gone through a lot of changes, and it hasn't worked out. The Rudy trade, Gobert trade just hasn't worked. But here's a guy who is the number one overall pick. He's improved his scoring, rebounding, assists, field goal percentage, and three-point percentage every season he's been in the league. He had 29 on Monday. He scored 20 or more in 16 of his last 17 games. He's just outside the top 10 in minutes. He's really doing – and the value he is to the Timberwolves on a team that has Rudy and Karl Anthony Towns, who's been injured, obviously. But when he is not on the court, they score almost 11 points per 100 possessions less than when he is on the court. I mean, you take – for example, you take Rudy Gobert, they score – more points when he's off the court. They score seven and almost eight more points a game per 100 possessions when he's off the court than when he's on. So his value to the team has been tremendous this year. He keeps getting better, and I'd really like to see him making an All-Star team this year. He maybe will. It just doesn't look like the numbers may bear that out.
Yeah, and it's going to be a true test for the Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards, here soon. In today's game, Rudy Gobert actually got injured. I believe he only played 4 minutes in tonight's game. So, Bruce, your hopes of maybe getting Naz Reid could be out the door now with both Kat and Rudy Gobert sidelined. They're really going to need to rely upon Naz Reid for some five-man minutes. But, you know, Anthony Edwards is going to be tested with Gobert off the floor. And as you said, we're going to see just the effect he has when he's off the court. you know, with a defensive guy like Gobert not around to help them out. My opening tip, guys, is just actually a question. And my question is, which team or teams, since it does take two to tango, will be the first domino to tip over the trade around the league? I think the last trade restriction has now passed on January 15th. The NBA trade deadline's on February 9th, so that's right around the corner. We'll be here before we know it. And what I can tell you from working in the NBA for 7 years is so much of the trends in the league, especially when it comes to trading and kind of just waiting. It's almost like a junior high dance. Who's going to be that first person out on the dance floor? All right. And it takes one trade to kind of get that domino effect going, get everybody in the mood to start making some moves. And I'm waiting to see who's going to be the one to do it. I actually spoke with a league executive since our last taping, asking him if he thinks it's coming in the near future. He thinks it's going to be slow up until probably a day or two before the deadline. But I'm going to kind of disagree with him, despite him being an inside source. I just don't see a lot of these teams just sitting back, continuing to lose games, not be competitive, when a lot of the teams that I'm referring to are ones that we're thinking were deadlocks to be in the playoffs. And we got a lot of teams that should have been, you know, top four or five respectively in their conferences, not in contention right now. They're more in the play-in tournament. And so, you know, there's some names that I'm keeping an eye on for sure. Amir Coffey of the Clippers, Dwayne Dedmon of the Miami Heat, Jordan Nwora of the Milwaukee Bucks, Chris Boucher of the Toronto Raptors. And at this point in time, I think it'd even just take like an Amir Coffey for Dwayne Dedmon swap, which would make sense for both of those two teams, to really get the party started. So that's what I'm looking forward to. And I can't wait for someone just to get out on that dance floor and start dancing.
So, wouldn't you think it would have to be the Suns at this point to get rid of Crowder?
You would think
they
right?
would have to be the first team. How he's still around is, yep, you know, hard for me to fathom at this point. He's just, they're paying him not to play.
Yep.
And there are teams that he could go to, and we've mentioned this before in previous podcasts. There are teams that could use him.
Yeah, and, like Phoenix.
Yeah,
like Phoenix. Yes. Yeah. And if he's not going to be there, I mean, why not trade him? Why not get value for him? There are teams that want him. You have somebody that teams want, and you can get something out of him. But I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs. Apparently,
how about like playing him? I mean, on Monday or today, as we record this, they got absolutely smoked by Memphis, and they're currently in the number 12 spot, but they're really very close to the number 6 spot, right? Because that whole Western Conference bottom of the – so, I mean, to me, it's like, you should at least – unless you just want to lose every game, because that's what they're doing right about now. You know, I was looking at Mark Stein's Substack. Mark, obviously, Hall of Fame NBA journalist. He was talking about a few rumors, and I'll just throw them out there because I can blow through them pretty quickly. He says that the Clippers are interested in Mike Conley Jr. from Utah if Utah becomes a seller, because John Wall's going to be out for a couple weeks. He says that Kyle Kuzma, who's averaging 21-7 and almost 4 assists, will not be traded by the Wizards. Okay. We'll see. Miami really likes D'Angelo Russell, but he's making $31 million. And in order to make that deal work, Minnesota would have to take Kyle Lowry, which is highly unlikely as he's a injured older guy with 2 years, I believe, left on his contract. And there's a three-way possible trade he talked about between the Cavaliers, the Jazz, and the Hawks, where the Cavaliers would get Malik Beasley, the Jazz would get John Collins, and the Hawks would get possibly Caris LeVert. So that's just some of the stuff that Stein is ruminating over.
Wow. Yeah. I'd be interested in all of those trades. I think the one that really stood out to me though, Bruce, would be the one with Mike Conley going to the Clippers. That would be a big statement by Utah to kind of just punt this season after they've had a surprising start to the year. They won another big game earlier tonight in Minnesota. And, I hope that doesn't happen just for the Jazz sake. I've really been a fan of the quality basketball team play that team has played this year. But, Mike Conley would be a great get for a Clippers team that as we've noted, have some inconsistent point guards in both Reggie Jackson and John Wall.
They absolutely, by the way, Utah does not get enough credit, not get talked about enough for what they did, they're doing this year. I mean, they gutted that franchise. Their two best players gone. They got rid of the coach, or he left, however you want to look at it. And so we all thought they were going to end up being like the Spurs are this year. And it's not been the case. Their offense is right up to the best of them, despite all the changes, despite losing everybody. Getting marketing was obviously a huge, surprising pick by them, you know, to the way he's performed. But, yeah, they don't get talked about nearly enough. They're not going to be a contender. We know that. So I agree with you. I wouldn't like to see them punt the season. On the other hand, because it's been such a surprise, but on the other hand, they're really not in that contender list.
Totally agree with you there, Will B. Well, to open up our first quarter, I thought we'd share some reactions from today's slate of games on the Martin Luther King holiday. Bruce, we'll start with you since I think your guys were the first team to tip things off here today. You want to talk about the Boston Celtics?
All right, twist my arm. I'll talk about the Celtics.
You're a rock.
Jason Tatum somehow or another managed 51 points today, 15 out of 23 from the floor, 14 out of 14 from the line, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. Every time I watch that guy play, I think, gee, he reminds me a little bit of Bob McAdoo sometimes, the old-timer who could just score so smoothly and fluidly. Today, he looked like Kevin Durant. I mean, easy money yeah. sniper today. Just, you know, similar length, just draining three-pointers like there was nobody out there against him. And, you know, and Boston, look, they had a really nice, you know, weekend, you know, Saturday, Monday, double back-to-back against Charlotte. I mean, a team that's just in a terrible place right now. And as World B and I were texting with you before, even their fans were chanting MVP.
Yeah.
And I know that must hurt you badly, World B, because I know that you have a great affinity for Charlotte.
Oh, I'm a Hornets follower since I lived there for so many years and watched them go through some, you know, horrendous seasons since their return. And this is really shaping up to be it is a terrible season for whatever reason you want to explain, you know, define it or explain it. It's just been a terrible season. But, yeah, Tatum was on fire right from the start. I got to watch the game from the beginning, and, you know, they jumped all over him early. It got tight now in the second half. Charlotte made a run. Got it down to two a number of times, but just couldn't get, you know, get it tied. I don't think they ever had it tied. And I don't think it was after a while, you know, they pulled away. Because, you know, you mentioned somehow Jason Tatum got to 51. Well, I know how. He's playing the Hornets in the defense. It's not hard to figure out how. But he was on fire. He got 14 of 14 from the line. He scored a bunch of his points late when they were pulling away, just hitting three after three from the wing. And it was just incredible. The fans were going crazy. It was, you know, obviously Boston is a national following. They're one of those teams. And it was a good effort for a while for the Hornets to get back in it, but there's just too much on the plate for the Celtics to lose a game like this that they clearly wanted to win and get out of the way because they went up early.
So that's 7 in a row for my boys, Ross, and it looks to me like, you know, where other teams, you know, they hit a little bit of a dry patch about a month ago. They seem to have corrected things, and now it almost looks like they're starting to separate ever so slightly from some of the teams, other top teams in the East.
Yeah, I mean, outside of the obvious with Jason Tatum being a very bad, bad man tonight, just overall, the ball movement on the perimeter, they were putting up a high volume of threes, which I know Boston fans got to be excited about because that's when they're playing at their best, shooting a ton of three balls. Derek White, he's been huge as of late. He's really stepped up his play entering the starting lineup. He was 3 of 7 from deep here tonight. Al Horford, 2 of 4, hit a key one from the corner when Charlotte was on a run. And got to give a shout out to Jalen McDaniels. He had a huge game for the Hornets and increased his trade value. He had 26 points on 9 of 15 shooting, 5 of 7 from 3. So hopefully that will help him and Charlotte on the trade market as far as, you know, maybe offering him to a team like Phoenix. He has been linked to the Suns before, so that's kind of an interesting destination for him. But credit to Boston's defense. What really stood out is LaMelo Ball really couldn't get anything going. Wasn't able to find a lot of passing lanes. When he did try to pass it, they were shut off or closed out early. And, you know, LaMelo ended with only six assists. Usually that guy's got six assists at halftime. So Boston keeps rolling, as you stated, Bruce, and they look back to their old ways with or without Jaylen Brown.
By the way, real quick, before you get to the next game, I saw something in this game. I don't remember the last time I've seen. There were four occasions where a three-point shooter got fouled. The Hornets did it three times and the Celtics did it once. You get one of those a game and really no more. I saw four of them today. That's just unbelievable.
I thought you were going to say you saw something you'd never seen before. Miles Plumlee made a free throw, but
left-hand. Left-handed free throw. Yeah, just kind of like
eyes
a
open.
Push
eyes
shot
open
now.
Too.
Yeah. It is the ugliest thing. It's so ugly.
Really, yeah. He's got a push shot from just outside the paint that he does with his left hand now, too. At times I've seen it, it's been effective, but it's not pretty to watch.
So you're saying that when we do our next Build Your Perfect Player exercise, it's not going to be Miles Plumlee's release?
No, but maybe if we do our favorite imperfect player, maybe we'll throw that out sometime and come up with the ugliest things around the league.
That would be fun. We should do that.
Yeah. By the way, Markelle Fultz's free throw shooting form I witnessed last night was not a whole lot better. It looked like something out of a CYO game.
Well, it beats Jeremy Sohan's, the underhand. He's going underhand since he's not having much luck, so might as well just try the granny shot. But
well, second what color game is his hair this week? Is he still got the green hair rocking?
It's either green, blue, or I don't know. He's always got something on. At least there's some reason to keep us on our toes in San Antonio this year, because it's been quite a year. Second game I wanted to go to was World B's New York Knicks. They were hosting a tough opponent in the Toronto Raptors, who have been playing better as of recently. And why don't you kick us off, World B?
Well, geez, let's see. Well, first of all, the Raptors cheated. I haven't figured out how, but they did it. They cheated somehow. I'll get back to you on how later. But I mean, it was a good, exciting game. RJ Barrett ties it up late with a dunk, and he had a really big night for a change. 32. He still can't shoot outside of the paint with anything. 2 of 9 from. I saw 32 points and go 2 of 9 from 3-point range. Well, you go 10 for 11 from the line. I guess that's how. So they got a nice effort from Julius Randle and Brunson almost won at the end, although he really had a troublesome game with his shot, but. A lot of free throws in this game, 76 combined. I mean, that's a lot there. But yeah, get credit to Toronto. They battled there. They had a lead. They lost it. They got it back in overtime. They almost gave it away again. But I mean, all five starters in double figures, and Van Vliet, 33 points. You can go the way he's played. He can go a week without 33 points. Sometimes this season, he's really had a tough time with his shot, but obviously got it together today. And Scotty Barnes had a nice night. He haven't had that of late. 23 points and 9 of 13 from the line, 7 boards, 4 assists. And Siakam was the way he usually is and steady. He didn't have the 52 he had a few weeks ago against the Knicks. He had to settle for just 20 and 9, along with 6 assists, but. A really good game. Not a whole lot of guys played a whole lot of minutes tonight. I mean, RJ got 49 minutes tonight, and they had that's a lot of minutes, boys and girls. And Randall played 42, Brunson played 43, Barnes played 44. I mean, Siakam played 46, Van Vliet played 44. Apparently, they only suit up 5 guys for Monday afternoon games for each team, but.
Well, in fairness, that game did go to overtime. So,
absolutely, but with 53 minutes, still you're still looking at a lot of guys. I mean, that means RJ Barrett sat for less than 4 minutes.
That's called Tom Thibodeau load management or load mismanagement or something.
I'm just gonna run you into the ground.
Siakam played 46 minutes and he fouled out with, I think, 2 minutes to go in the overtime. So he would have played 48.
That's right.
But as you mentioned, will be credit to Toronto. They battled back in that second half. Their first second half lead came with 1:01 left on the clock and went ahead and forced overtime and came out on top in that extra 5 minute period. Big win for Toronto. Obviously, they're trying to make up for some bad losses previously this season. And this is definitely one that they can definitely hang their hat on and be excited about because wasn't looking good. Knicks had control. Julius Randle was playing out of his mind, but they just hung in there and came back for the win. Next game I wanted to talk about was the Pacers at the Bucks. I was under the impression that Giannis was going to play today. It sounded like from all reports as of last night that Giannis was going to suit up. And then it came out just this morning in the pregame that he was going to sit an extra day, which I think threw the Bucks for a loophole there. And they found themselves down at half to the Indiana Pacers, who are without Tyrese Halliburton. The Pacers did get back Miles Turner, who had been out, and TJ McConnell, of all players of the Pacers, 25 points at halftime. I know that we were chatting about that as that one was going on. TJ, I think, ended up with 29 points, 9 assists. He had a heck of a game. But as I mentioned, you know, it is a national holiday today, Bruce. So, you know, Drew was a huge key from Milwaukee. I don't find that too much of a coincidence.
Yeah, well, Drew Holiday delivered today, but his two brothers, Aaron and Justin, took the holiday off as they combined for 0 points in the Atlanta game.
Yeah. So that one was an interesting one in Milwaukee, of course, without Giannis and Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday being able to help them on top. And a guy that we have not talked about enough on Milwaukee this year, he's one of the leaders in the league in double-doubles, Bobby Portis. I don't think we've talked about how important he has been to that team this year with his production. He had another solid game for the Bucks and a key home win for them as they were without two of their three stars. World B, any other games that you watched today that you think are worth noting?
Well, I thought you know, Miami and Atlanta was it wasn't a great game from the standpoint of you know, didn't go to overtime. The Heat never led, but it was a good effort for Atlanta, a team that really needs to start getting together. Now they get up to 500. You know, we've talked about them on previous podcasts, what a train wreck they look like they had been for a long time. And all of a sudden, you know, you're facing a Miami team that was playing better and was, you know, had won 3 in a row, 7 out of 10. It looked like they had things going, and they go and they took it to Miami. I mean, they really hammered them good. And you're starting to see when everybody gets healthy, and we're going to talk about a little bit later, the importance of depth, how much that factors, even to a team like Atlanta, you know, that has Bogdanovich coming off the bench, how quality he can be along with those guys. You know, the backcourt played really well for Atlanta, 52 points combined between Murray and Young. That was impressive. And they shot the ball well from three-point range, almost 50%, 13 of 27. So, you know, good effort by Atlanta to get maybe make a push and get back going into this playoff picture. We never really consider them much of a threat for obvious reasons. They weren't. So now they're 500. Maybe things can get going for them.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to keep an eye on Atlanta, especially around the trade deadline, with John Collins being a guy that's been, you know, noted as someone who could be out the door, and maybe a little shakeup, a minor shakeup at that, could help them propel them into at least a play-in spot in the Eastern Conference. One note I had on Miami Heat, Bruce, you had mentioned that the other night they went a perfect 40 of 40 from the line. Tonight they were 19 of 20 from the line, so didn't get to the line too much, but when they did, once again, just a stellar performance from the team from the charity stripe.
That was one game today that I was watching a bunch of games, and that one sort of slipped through the cracks. I'm just curious, did Tyler Hero play today?
He did. Yep. Yeah. He played 31 minutes, 15 points on 7 of 16 shooting. Did struggle from the outside. He was 1 of 8 from downtown, but definitely.
The whole team struggled.
Yeah. Definitely a welcome addition back for that Miami Heat group, though, that have been very shorthanded here as of late. So
yeah. I knew Butler had big numbers today, and I think Bam had like 20 and 13. That's just from box score memory type of thing. But that makes the fact that Hero played makes that Atlanta victory even more impressive today. So good for them.
Absolutely. And then the game we already talked about a little bit and just briefly mentioned was the Grizzlies pounding the Phoenix Suns in Memphis tonight. Suns had quite the dismal starting lineup going. We can talk about that if you want, but figured we'd mostly focus on the Grizzlies and the Nuggets here for our second quarter, as both those two teams are really starting to separate themselves atop the Western Conference. After tonight's win over Phoenix, the Grizzlies have now won a league high 10 straight games. That is the highest active winning streak in the league as we speak here tonight. And Bruce, I want to start with you on this one and kind of see what you're seeing from those two teams and why you think they are separating themselves. What are you noticing about what they're doing?
Well, you know, the thing about Memphis is that, you know, and we talk about this almost every time we discuss Memphis. That is a team that knows who they are. They have a style, they have a kind of a culture, and they kind of stick with it. And also, I know later on as World BTs, we're going to talk a little bit about teams with depth that could make a deep run. That is a deep, deep team right there. I mean, they've got Ja Morant, they've got Desmond Bane. You know, we talk about best backcourts in the NBA. I mean, that one's right up there, you know, certainly from the offensive point of view. You've got, you know, Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr., possibly the best shot blocker in the NBA right now, although he hasn't played enough games to qualify for the lead. But the official leader is Nick Claxton at 2.6. JJJ is averaging 3.2. He just needs to play a few more games. And then you've got, you know, a guy like Dylan Brooks, who's, you know, mid-teens, you know, scorer, but plays with such passion. I mean, he's almost like a Marcus Smart kind of a engine on their team in some ways. And then one of my favorite guys, the caveman, Steven Adams. I believe he's leading the league in offensive rebounds. He's just a relentless banger, a legitimate tough guy. And, you know, and then you got a guy like Brandon Clark, who's also coming off the bench, averaging 10 and 5 in under 20 minutes. I mean, that team is well, you know, insulated from injury. If somebody goes down, they have capable backups. And to me, that's a team that, again, along with Denver and Boston, I mean, those are the top three teams.
Yeah, and you mentioned that team has an identity. That, I think, always stems back to the front office as well. Got to give them a ton of credit. You just look at their team from top to bottom, and they just have a bunch of bangers at every position. They are such a big team. Big physical team. I mean, coming off their bench, Brendan Clark's huge. David Roddy's big. Aldama's big. Zaire Williams is big. Xavier Tillman, Jake Laviera. All those guys at their positions are bigger guys. And so they really know how to kind of fit a niche within their system. And they're all interchangeable at you know, a certain point. And tonight, as you mentioned, with Jaren Jackson Jr. being amongst the leaders in blocks, he had 6 swats in tonight's game, so he's definitely continuing to climb the block totals in the league. And got to give a special shout out. I've been very hard on him, but Ja Morant, not sure if you guys saw it, and we would be doing a disservice to NBA fans if we didn't talk about this. I think Ja Morant has the dunk of the year over Aaron Gordon now. What he did the other night to Jalen Smith on the Indiana Pacers, I mean, he just almost ended him. Did you guys see that?
Oh, yeah. now Jalen Smith goes, what, about 6'10"?
6'10", yep.
And Ja is what, like 6'5", 6'6"?
I don't even know. He's that tall. 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah, he's like 6'3", tops.
Yeah. So 6'3", just absolutely posterizing, demoralizing a 6'10". That, it was the dunk, perhaps, of the last several years.
Yeah. That's one of those dunks you see in, I don't know if you guys remember Slam Ball when that was on TV, but that's certainly, that's what it looked like. He cocked that thing all the way back and just flushed it on him. And I just kept thinking about Slam Ball, seeing that. I mean, when Ja Morant takes off and has an open lane, it really does look like he's jumping off a trampoline. So quite incredible there. Well, Will B, I want to pick your brain on the other team that I had mentioned, the Denver Nuggets. All right. I know it all starts with the Joker, but what are some things you're seeing in these last couple of games that are helping them separate from the rest of the Western Conference.
Well, the thing that I've criticized them about, and actually last night, Sunday night, was critical the way they played, but they were still really good, is their defense. I mean, this month, they're they've been every month, October, November, December, they were in the bottom half of the league in defensive efficiency. So far in January, they're top five. They're number four. They're allowing less than 110 points per 100 possessions. So, when you got a team that's as good as they are offensively and you have them step it up on defense, it's really – they're really going to be a tough team to beat. Their offense is still the way – as good as it's been. It's as good as it's been any month this season in efficiency and shooting. It's their highest averages in efficiency, their highest effective field goal percentage of any month this season. And we're talking about a team that's first or second in offense every month, and they're just getting better. That's ridiculous. They didn't even need a super offensive effort last night – or Sunday night, excuse me, from Joker. He had one field goal attempt in the fourth quarter Sunday night, just happened to be the game winning three. That was one of the all great daggers of the season, because he was looking around for somebody to pass to and he couldn't find him. So it's all right, well, I gotta step – time's running out, I'll just step back and take a three with somebody in my face. I mean, it's just an incredible run that he's on and that they're on. The one thing I would say, and I mentioned this before the show, they're starting to separate themselves, but don't rule out the New Orleans Pelicans yet as far as being a part of in this conference. They're not healthy right now. They're missing Williamson. They're Zion. They're missing Brandon Ingram, and they're still winning games. They're still tonight notwithstanding. But they're the only team in the West among Western Conference teams that's in the top 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency. And that, they are very much – the way they play and the way they score is very similar to the Grizzlies. They're not a good shooting team, and yet they're managed to be among the best and the most efficient teams in the league because they get second chance points. They get points off turnovers. They go on the fast break. They get points in the paint. They're in the top 10 in all these categories. So they're a team, when they get healthy now – I'm doing this all in the assumption at some point before the end of the season they're going to have a healthy lineup. If they don't, then, well, it's nighty-night. But assuming they get healthy, that's a team that can rack up some wins and really make a mess of things for the other two in the West.
Bruce. Russ, what are your thoughts? Well, I have a few thoughts. Yeah, I was going to flip it to you. You've been giving us all, you've been dropping dimes. You need to get a couple buckets here.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, what I was seeing last night when the Nuggets squeaked out that win, as World B alluded to, was Aaron Gordon. I know I've mentioned him all year and I'll continue to do it until I'm blue in the face, but played 32 minutes, had 25 points, which was a team high, 9 of 13 shooting. So he was super efficient. And what I've noticed about Aaron Gordon here recently is he's really starting to create a lot of the offense as well. I know it all starts with the Joker and he kind of initiates the offense, but don't get me wrong here. Aaron Gordon is creating offense for others. He had 5 assists in the last game. His assist totals for this year are well above his career averages. And so he's starting to attract a lot more attention from opposing defenses, and he has been able to recognize it and be selfless with the basketball. And I think that's been huge for them in a season where Michael Porter Jr. really hasn't been up to par. I mean, it's nice that he's back, but he's been a roller coaster as far as performance. And same kind of goes with Jamal Murray. So I just can't stop giving credit to Aaron Gordon, because he has just been a tremendous piece to that team. And I think he's what's continuing to keep that engine run along with Jokic.
Well, I know that you could say that they really kind of have a legitimate big three now, if you want to throw Murray in there. I mean, he's played 36 of their games, so he's only missed a handful of games, and almost 17 a game, or almost 19 a game for Murray.
He's starting to play better too.
Yeah,
he's starting to play a little bit better, and that's can only mean good things for that team. But his 3-point shooting, I believe, on the above the break area of the 3-point line so far this month, he's the third best shooter. And you know, which is what, you know, the Nuggets need. They need another guy, another offensive threat. They need somebody at that position to be another offensive threat. But he's starting to get his shot together, and on a team that's already great offensively, that only means trouble for the rest of the league.
Yep. So after tonight with Memphis win, Denver and the Grizzlies, both at 30 wins, 13 losses. Another team I wanted to talk about here for our third quarter is the Sacramento Kings. This is a team that is flourishing under the leadership of their new head coach and Mike Brown. Currently,
Look at Bruce Smile to very mention. Who else in the country outside of Sacramento starts smiling when the name Sacramento Kings comes up? Just Bruce, I think.
Russ loves Sacramento. So,
I love the Kings.
Yeah,
the
beam team. But I'm just so happy for Mike Brown, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. Mike Brown is—I'll admit—he's a friend. We've managed to stay in touch over the years. I'm hoping maybe one week we'll have him come on this show. I think that would be awesome if he did. I'll be working on that down the road. But it's like, it's so weird because this guy has always hung his hat on his team's playing rugged defense. But Sacramento is leading the NBA in scoring. Okay. Yes. And they're very mediocre defensively. I'm sure World B has numbers to back that up. I have a couple. His are usually much more sophisticated. But, I mean, Domantas Sabonis, he's an MVP candidate. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. If he doesn't finish in the top 10, he's not going to win it, obviously. But, I mean, it'll be a crime if he doesn't at least finish in the top 10 of the NBA MVP voting this year.
Sabonis is the newly named Western Conference Player of the Week. As well, he's been playing extremely good. And going back real quickly to Mike Brown, I have involved myself in some Sacramento Kings fan circles because, you know, if there was any fan base I could be a part of right now, it'd be the Sacramento Kings. I mean, just to see that crowd, the energy, the cowbells, the beam, they've got it all going on right now. And one thing that they mention a lot in a lot of their chats is the Mike Brown timeout. And not sure if you guys have noticed, but there will be games that Mike Brown will call a timeout 45 seconds into the game if he doesn't like what he sees. If the first couple possessions, they're not getting back on defense or there's a blown coverage defensively, he's calling what they're calling a Mike Brown timeout, and it seems to be working. Those guys respond. And so a few of my buddies that have been watching the Sacramento Kings now, if I'm tuned into a game, they'll text me, Mike Brown timeout. And the effect he's had on this team this year, I think the responsibility he's putting on the players and allowing them to kind of dictate the success that they have on the floor, I think that goes from guys like, of course, De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis, but also guys like Kevin Huerter, a guy that's just joined the team this year and it's been a huge addition. He's been great, and he's been very critical in games with his body language on the sidelines, you know, making sure that Keegan Murray, their fourth pick overall, is held accountable, and Keegan's been taking it like a true professional. I think they got a really good rookie in there that wants to learn and, you know, is able to take criticism and wants to get better. And that's a good sign for a Sacramento team that has not always had rookies that would respond well to criticism, as we know.
This is a great rookie class. I'll let you go in a sec, Mike. This is a great rookie class with Banchero, Mathurin in Indiana, Keegan Murray, and Jaden Ivey. Those are four stud players just killing it for their teams. So anyway, go ahead, Mike.
No, I couldn't agree more with that. It's been it's really worked out the draft. I'm going to play the gloomy Gus here when it comes to the Kings and say, just maybe pump the brakes just a second on the Kings. There are four games they've won in a row here, the four-game winning streak. The Rockets twice, the Spurs, and the Magic. So they've gone up against the worst defensive team in the league in the Spurs, the third worst defensive team in the league in the Rockets twice, and another bottom 10 defensive team in the Magic. Now, that being said, they've absolutely destroyed these teams to the tune of unbelievable 134.5 points per 100 possessions. That's an amazing number for for a team on a street, you know, run like that. And for the month, they're scoring 126 points per 100 possessions, and shooting, their effective field goal percentage is almost 60. It's like 59.9 or something like that, or 59. Those are amazing numbers to be on. So you give them credit. They're not exactly, these games are not close, that they are playing. If you couldn't schedule any better. You couldn't schedule, if you were Alabama in September playing football, this is the kind of schedule you would have if it'd be these four teams. Now, that being said, they're having a really good run. They've got the three-pointers you mentioned with Huter is really impressive. They've really stepped it up in terms of just attempts. They didn't use it much last year as a town. I think only 20 – they were 23rd in percentage of attempts that were threes. This year they're in top 10. And they're shooting better than last year, so that means the higher percentage of your scoring is going to come from threes. It's a big improvement in that area. And – if they can keep it going, yeah, they can be a factor come playoff time as well. They can be a factor in getting a home court for a first round.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, World B, because right now, as it stands in the Pacific Division, the Sacramento Kings are in first place, and they hold a 2.5 game lead over the Los Angeles Clippers. So first place in the Pacific. Don't think anyone saw that happening this year for the Sacramento team, and no time to pump the brakes, World B. Right now, they're banging cowbells and they're lighting beams, so there's no break.
Well, how many more games do they have against the Rockets? How many more games? I'm just curious. I just want to make sure.
Not enough.
Their schedule
not
does enough. Get tougher, by the way. Just it does get tougher coming up. It can't get worse, so it can only get tougher. But it does get tougher coming up, and I will be very interested to see how they do going forward. But they've been impressive from the start of the season.
I want to talk about somebody on that team that doesn't really get any of the shine. I mean, we always talk about Sabonis. We talk about De'Aaron Fox. Harrison Barnes is aging like fine wine. He started every game. He's the only guy who's played every game for them, okay? He's in his 12th season. He's only 30, okay? Remember, he was there at the beginning of the Warriors dynasty. Then they moved him out, you know, but he was there his first 3 years. He won a championship his third year. He was a starter on that team. He's building a career that's probably not going to be a Hall of Fame career. But again, he's in his 12th season. It's hard not to root for this guy because he's always conducted himself, you know, with class. He's a UNC guy. There's a little bit about his career that's kind of making me feel a little Antoine Jameson, another UNC guy who just has been was consistent. Now, Jameson is one of only two guys with 20,000 career points that's not in the Hall of Fame. So I don't know if that could change at some point, he and Tom Chambers. But I just want to, you know, give a little love to Harrison Barnes. 12 seasons in the league, only 30, playing great ball, averaging 15-5, and providing veteran leadership on a team that has a number of youngish guys.
And yeah, by the way, you're talking about Harrison Barnes with his streak. He's shooting almost 50% from three during the four games. I mean, he's unconscious right now from three-point range. So another three-point threat that the Kings have is obviously Harrison Barnes, and he's a big reason why they've won the four in a row.
And Bruce, I'm glad you mentioned Harrison Barnes because that's a perfect segue here into our fourth quarter and just discussing the importance of depth. And with how this year is going in particular with major stars out across the league, you know, it's an ultra important thing to have. And we're seeing some of the top teams have that depth. And was just wondering if there's a team or two that really stands out to you, Bruce, that have depth and you've been very impressed with kind of just the options that they have.
Well, we already talked about Memphis, and that they would probably be number one on my list of teams that have, you know, incredible depth. But take a good look at Denver's depth. I mean, we talked about him last week. You know, Bruce Brown, guy comes off the bench, is like a shot of adrenaline when he comes into the game. Bones Highland, who's a you know, knockdown shooter, shooting over 40% on threes, comes off the bench for them. You mentioned Michael Porter Jr. has maybe not really been, you know, that guy this year. But again, he started 29 games, averaging 16, shooting 40% on threes, good numbers. And then Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is shooting almost 48% on threes. And leads the team with 42 starts. He started all but one game, 11.7 points. So to me, when you put those four guys next to the big three, you've got seven really legitimate double-figure scorers. And again, I think Denver is well positioned along with Memphis to come out of the West. One of those two teams, I believe, will.
World B, who do you have in mind for a team that has a lot of depth? Who stands out to you?
Well, one of the teams that stands out for me, we mentioned them earlier, I told you, it's the Pelicans. The way they have had to use that depth as starters because of all the injuries. You know, they get Najee Marshall and Trey Murphy III are having to start right now because of injuries to their guys. But that speaks to the quality of depth they have. These guys are not just starting, they're contributing. They're getting double-digit points, you know, per night. You look at the top five in net efficiency from the bench, and you look at the top five teams in terms of, you know, the best. Cleveland Cavaliers, one of the best teams in the league. Oklahoma City, which is one of the up-and-coming teams all of a sudden. They have just a plethora of players they throw out there. The Suns, who are a train wreck right now, but they have, you know, when they're got guys coming off the bench that should be on the bench, they're quality. Then you have the Pelicans, who are a team I just made, and the Celtics. Or no, these are the best, you know, these are the best teams in net efficiency from their bench. It's not a surprise you're talking about three of the best teams in the league and another team that's up and coming that has just a bunch of young talent. It's so huge, obviously, depth come playoff time. It's incredibly important. We will see the marginal player make a 5 or 6 minute contribution and becomes the start of the topic of the day, you know, for their play. So it's a huge issue. And you can just look at the box score every night. Look at guys who were quality coming off the bench.
Yeah. And my team, going back to our third quarter, would be the Sacramento Kings. I've mentioned it on a previous pod. You never know who it's going to be, and that kind of makes it fun, but also kind of scary for consistency. But they just have a lot of different options. Davion Mitchell brings a ton of energy on the defensive side of the ball. Trey Lyles has been playing great for the team. I'll talk about him a little bit later in my best bets section of the show. And then, you know, you got other solid contributors, and Rashawn Holmes that can bring energy at the five position. Malik Monk has had his fair share of high scoring nights for Sacramento this year, kind of excelling them to victory. I really like how Mike Brown has utilized that bench, keeping everybody kind of involved and ready to go. Terrence Davis, another name that's had some big time nights and even has started a few games for this team this year. So Sacramento would be the team outside of the Pelicans in the West that has really impressed me with their bench depth.
They're going to need to, if they're going to add anything, they need some more rebounding. They're not a good rebounding team. You know, after Sabonis, their next highest rebounder is Barnes at 5. So yeah, no rebounds, no rings.
Nope. You're right about that. So we'll now get into our best bets part of the show. And today what I want to do is talk about some hot players that are potentially good prop guys for bets or even fantasy league targets. And we're going to start off with the Oklahoma City Thunders. And that is with Josh Giddey. Josh Giddey, as of recently, has been giddy scoring the ball. He is 20-plus points in 3 straight games, and he has scored at least 20 points in 8 of his last 12 outings. The Oklahoma City Thunder, as we briefly touched upon, have started to kind of climb up the standings. They are in a play-in spot as of today, and a lot of that has to do with guys stepping up around SGA, and Giddey has been a big one of those. Second guy I want to talk about who's really putting together an impressive 2 to 3 week stretch here, Victor Oladipo. Coach Spo just came out recently and said that Depo is the Miami X factor this year, and he has certainly not disappointed here recently. In his last 3 games, he's averaging 18 points a game on 34 minutes a night, shooting at least 15 shots a game, so he's extremely active in that offensive system that Miami runs, and he has hit two or more triples in every game to go along with an average of 2 steals on the defensive end. So Victor Oladipo has played huge, especially in Tyler Hero's absence, and looks to be a guy that's going to be a big part of that rotation, even with Hero back. So keep an eye on Victor Oladipo, the Miami Heat. And lastly, Trey Lyles. Trey Lyles has scored 11 plus points in his last five games. And he was 10 of 16 from downtown in that stretch. And he's really doing a great job spacing the floor, knocking down the open opportunities from the corner. And he's giving, you know, Mike Brown another nice threat off that bench as we discuss their depth. So keep an eye on those three guys. And I think this is a great opportunity for us to get right into our final thought here tonight, Bruce, and let you tee us up for that.
Okay. We're into overtime now. We've gone past the 48 minutes, but we know that everybody out there listening is just like hanging on our every word. So we have a few more for you. We won't keep you all forever. But because today is, or Monday was, by the time you hear this, the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, I just wanted to, you know, share a couple thoughts. And I know the fellows want to do the same. Martin Luther King, to me, is somebody who has never been replaced in our society. You know, leaders come and go, politicians come and go. But when we lost Martin Luther King, we lost somebody that was irreplaceable. In our society today, we're so fractured. You know, our politicians are mostly garbage, and that goes for all of them for the most part. But with Martin Luther King, he was all about uniting people. He was all about judging people based on the content of their character, not on the color of their skin. Just a wonderful leader, a hero, a personal hero to me. People have asked, you know, we all probably been asked the question, if you could have a meal with one person dead or living, you know, there's a lot of popular choices. You know, some would say Jesus Christ. Some might say Abraham Lincoln. Mine is Martin Luther King Jr. for many of the reasons I just stated. So he'll always be remembered. He'll always be missed. He'll never be replaced.
World B?
Well, you know, in thinking about what I wanted to say for this segment in regards to Dr. King, I started to think about and realize, you know, we're just a few years away, 2026, from our nation being 250 years old. And I can't think of, in the history of this country, good luck trying to find five more influential people that we've had in this nation than Dr. King. It's, you know, you go back from the beginning, go back to the Declaration of Independence all the way to now, and try and find five more people more influential for this country than Dr. King. I can't do it. It was an amazing individual, and I've said this before, is that, you know, there will never be another man like Dr. King. But these days, we really could use one as a nation to have another one come along. I just don't know if there will be one anytime soon.
Well said there as well. For me, today is my second favorite day of the NBA schedule with the games. And not just the games, but I really do love the segments that the NBA puts out there with players, coaches, previous players, other influencers talking about the impact Dr. King has had, not only on those around the league, but on our society, as you guys touched upon. And what really was always special to me is my mom was actually a civics teacher. She was an eighth grade civics teacher. And Dr. King was one of her favorite topics to teach her kids about. And kind of tying it back to my days in the NBA, you know, we saw it today in the NBA games with the special Dr. King warm-up shirt that all teams wear in unity. That was one shirt, and one thing I always did was made sure I got my hands on one of those t-shirts for my mom, and something special that she was able to share with her students and would always wear it the week that she was going to discuss just the tremendous impact that Dr. King had on the world. And That's my favorite memory of the MLK holiday tied in with the NBA, and know that I was always taught and brought up with the values that Dr. King had shared with the world, and he was always a huge impact in the classroom for my mom during that topic, and just seeing those shirts even today while I'm out of the league just puts a smile on my face knowing she used to wear that and you know would teach the younger generations of his very very strong teaching points on how we should treat one another and how we're all equal. So That's all I got, gentlemen. Anything else from you guys before we go ahead and put this overtime to rest?
Not from me. I think we kind of put a nice exclamation point on a very special day in basketball in honor of a very special hero.
All right. Well, with that, we want to thank you for tuning in to episode 10 of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe. Before you go, be sure to hit like and subscribe, and we'll be back with you on Friday for episode 11. Take care, everybody.